It's race number 6 of the 2022 Formula One season, and we're off to Spain. Used in testing every year, and one of F1's mainstay tracks, Catalunya is one of the circuits the drivers know best. It's a track that has a mixture of twisty corners, sweeping bends, and long, fast straights. Whilst not strictly the best for overtaking, it's still one of my favourite tracks, and one I always look forward to. I'm Andrew Elliott. I'm here with my good friend David Proud, and we'd like to welcome you to the Tired and Exhausted podcast. If you like what you hear, please share us with your friends, family, and anyone who loves Formula One. It's great to have you with us.
So I want to begin with how last podcast we discovered that, what was it, I set up my mic and then I leaned back, so I then become really quiet, and you set up your mic and then you lean right forward, don't you? So we discovered this, didn't we, at the end of the last podcast, because we listened back to it. And we settle all the levels and we make it sound very, very professional.
It sounds great before we start recording, but then you lean back in your chair and you're quieter, and I have to try and turn you up.
So no leaning forward for you.
Just don't move. Let's just stay in this position.
Yeah, I'm literally suspended animation now. I'm just like here for the next however long this will be. So Spain.
Yeah, I've been really looking forward to this. I know statistically Spain is not that exciting, and you know, it's
as a country, like
the track Catalunya track is, you know, it's, I think something like 90% of the wins are won from pole position, and so it's one of the ones that's, you know, traditionally won on qualifying. But I really love the track. I think it's got everything. I mean, it's not perhaps the most you know, the best overtaking track, but it's got these tight twisty sections. It's got these long swooping corners. It's got these long straights as well. It's just, for me, it's got everything. I mean, particularly from a driver's point, I mean, I've never driven there actually, but like on, you know, Formula One games and that kind of stuff, it's one of my favourite tracks. So I always love it. There's always a great atmosphere there. Mm. It's always been great to watch Alonso in Spain. Obviously, the last couple of years we've had Carlos Sainz as well, so the atmosphere is really good.
Yeah.
And I've been really looking forward to it, particularly this year because of the regulations, meaning that they can sit behind other cars. I was hoping for a better race.
I think it's also fallen in a really good place in the calendar because we're in it now. You know, we're really in it. We can see who's got a dog in the game. You know, certain drivers are really, you know, that you can get that sense that they've got something to lose. You know, so they're all invested, and I think it fell at a right time in the calendar.
Yeah, and it's a track that all the drivers enjoy. It, you know, they do a lot of their testing in Catalunya, and it's one of my favourite tracks. Even though it's not traditionally, you know, the most exciting race, I think the overall weekend is great, and it's a good circuit. As Martin Brundle will say as well, it's like a chassis track or a chassis circuit. And what he means by that is, it's more about how your car can cope with different sorts of corners and not just the long straights. As, you know, it would be in opposition to something like Monza, where, you know, cars have very little downforce, you know, smaller rear wings, smaller front wings. They're trying to be as slippery as possible through the air because straight line speed is everything. And there, you know, it's like point and squirt track. You know, you've got like lots of long straights with, you know, right angle bends, that kind of thing. Whereas this is the opposite. This is all about the corners. So you'll see cars having more downforce because they know that, you know, you more than make up the time, you know, taking the corners faster than you will just by having a fast, slippery car.
And we didn't see that much porpoising.
No. So let's
great.
Yeah. Let's talk about some of the practice sessions. So they were, we didn't, I mean, lots of cars have kind of stopped porpoising. You know, you see it occasionally. It's funny now that the car this weekend that had the most porpoising was the Ferrari, I thought, after watching practices and qualifying in the race. I guess they're probably the least reluctant team to fix it because they don't want to break anything because they've got one of the fastest cars. So they're probably a little bit reluctant to fix what ain't broke. But lots of the other cars were a lot more stable, in particular Mercedes. The Mercedes has come on leaps and bounds.
Yeah,
in the
it's
last...
looking a lot more planted, isn't it?
Yeah, I didn't really see it porpoise much at all.
Yeah, and we'll go on to a bit later, obviously, the race and what they were able to do with it, which...
Yeah, but they were looking quick. I mean, in the practice sessions, the Ferrari was looking exceptionally fast over one lap. Didn't have bad race pace. The Red Bulls looked to have better race pace. You know, they weren't quite as quick over one lap. But over the race simulations, they were very, very good. So Red Bull were always going to do well. But Ferraris were very, very quick. And the Mercedes were looking quick as well. I mean, there were times when... You know, when the Mercedes was top of the session and they were putting in, even when they weren't quite top, they were putting in, you know, fast sector times, you know, purple sectors, that kind of thing, from both drivers. So Mercedes have come on leaps and bounds. They're still not there, you know, still not as quick as either the Red Bulls or the Ferraris, but they've come ahead.
Well, I didn't get to watch the practice sessions because I'm just going to confess, I completely forgot there was a Grand Prix on this weekend. I got my weekends totally mixed up. I thought it was next weekend. So there's me going, oh, you know, it's going to be Formula One next weekend. And you're like, yeah, it's qualifying today. I was like, oh, right, okay. So I completely forgot. So I do apologise for that. But so I didn't see the practices. But was there anything like really stand out in the practice or...
Not really. No, I mean, as I said, they're quite good fun at Catalunya. I do like the circuit. You know, you get to see lots of different camera angles in the practice sessions that you don't quite see in the race. So, you know, for someone who, if there's a particular circuit that you like, it's worth tuning into the practice sessions because you can see the helmet cam. Mm. You can see that one of my favourite cams isn't the, I mean, as much as I love the helmet cam, I like the one that's on the front
wing.
Yeah,
it's not got a name because it's really great.
I'm not sure. I absolutely love it. You can properly see the, it's almost the eye view that the drivers see, but it's much smoother because you don't see the head kind of moving around.
Yeah, but you actually see the kind of front bit.
You see how the front wings kind of, you know, move up and down, and yeah, like you say, they flex under, you know, under extreme drag, and when they're going really fast, and yeah, it's an outstanding view. So I quite like watching laps from that.
Yeah.
But yeah, the biggest thing for me out of practice was just that Mercedes were doing so well. Because as I think we mentioned last time, they kind of half fixed the porpoising, so they raised the ride height. That seemed to get rid of the porpoising, but obviously they weren't quite as fast. They weren't getting as much drag, which isn't as much of an issue last time around. But in Catalunya, which we said is a chassis circuit, you really do need the downforce. So you don't really want to be raising the ride height too much because the ground effect won't work. And last time around, they raised the ride height, got rid of the porpoising. They tried to lower the ride height to see how much they could get away with. Porpoising came back, raised the ride height again. Porpoising didn't go away, which was really strange. But they've obviously got to the bottom of that now.
Yeah.
And lots of other cars, you know, the Haases weren't doing too bad. The Alfa Romeos looked quick in the practice sessions.
Yeah. Well, it's weird because you were saying actually the Mercedes, they seem like the last people to really get the hang of this porpoising and try and get it under control, but the power unit's really, really, really great, and it's not as if the other teams aren't having some kind of performance mechanical kind of issues. And I think that now, let's just assume that they've got it under control from now on. I think there's other teams that got a lot bigger problems out there.
Yeah, it could be. Right, so I've now just fitted a pop filter to David's mic, so hopefully...
But that was seamless because you press pause, so...
Yeah, hopefully nobody will notice and we can edit this out. Anyway, so yeah, you're right, Mercedes... So Mercedes have had like one issue, I guess.
Yeah.
Or, you know, the big issue was the porpoising and being able to not just get rid of the porpoising, but get rid of the porpoising and not lose downforce. Mm. You know, so that's the thing.
But you did say, you called it really early. You said, once they get on top of that, I think they're going to be fine.
Yeah, because I know Christian Horner has said that he'd rather have a fast car that he needs to make reliable than a reliable car that's slow. But the Red Bulls have a lot of issues to fix. A lot of issues. Did you enjoy qualifying?
I did. I obviously Norris. I was a bit disappointed, but I think he got really unlucky there. That was such a close margin to not make it into Q3.
Yeah, he had his time deleted, didn't he? And he can only have been a couple of millimeters. Oh, yeah, I mean, I guess to be completely honest, I do like it when the officials enforce track limits. They should either, in my opinion, they should either enforce them or they don't. You know, the track is the track, and if your four wheels leave the track wherever it is, I think there should be a penalty, or they should just disregard it at all. When they say sometimes you can leave the track here and that's fine, but if you leave the track on the next corner, that's when you have a penalty. I don't like that. And then sometimes they even apply those rules. So it's easier and it's fairer if they say, look, this is the track as we've made it, and you know, and if you leave it, that, you know, your time will be deleted. So I'm quite happy they did that. It was a bit unfortunate that Norris was so close.
He's been unwell all weekend, and we'll probably get to that when we get to the race. But Daniel Ricciardo out-qualified him. But in order to do that, Lando Norris had to leave the track.
Yeah, I mean, you could still argue, though, that Daniel Ricciardo, you know, his lap was legal.
Yeah,
And Norris did do a lap beforehand that wasn't as good. So, you know, fair play to Daniel Ricciardo. Yeah. He did put in a better lap than his teammate.
Yeah.
What about Leclerc's qualifying lap?
Well, that was
a corker.
Insane, because he had his one deleted, didn't he, before?
He basically had one lap to put in a good one.
So
it was all or nothing. And it reminded me a little bit of Sebastian Vettel a few years ago, who would... he would just come out, you know, at the tail end of qualifying three, put in one lap, obliterate everybody else, and then you know, bugger off to the garage, and that'll be it.
It's great when they go, I just need one.
Yeah, but it was such a corker as well. It wasn't just a...
And it was 118, wasn't it? It was the first 118. He just came out, smashed a 118, and then...
Knocked about half a second to a second off everybody else's time, including his own. I mean, he was over a second faster than his last lap, wasn't he? So, astonishing. Really, really good.
Yeah, it was a proper drop the mic moment, which I really, really like that. Who else stood out for you?
The Mercedes, I thought they looked pretty good. You know, again I wasn't... Although they've been looking fast, they haven't been looking... pole position fast, but just nice to see them up there and contending and not outside of quali three and that kind of thing.
And I want to go back in time when I sarcastically said about Haas going into this season and reach into that podcast and slap myself for disrespecting Haas, but God, they're up there, aren't they?
They're not doing bad. They're not doing badly. Haas and Alfa Romeo.
Yeah,
seem to be doing well, and Bottas looks happy, doesn't he?
He's a very content driver.
He looks you know, happier than he has done the Mercedes, which is great to see. And okay, it's not quite as fast as the Mercedes, but I think everybody thought he was going to be right at the back of the grid. But he's up there, you know, challenging for points and racing with the Mercedes, which is really good to hear.
Yeah, no, it was It was quite without incident, to be honest, the whole qualifying. It wasn't really, no major incident. So
no, it's not. It's not really an accident-prone track. It's not lined with walls. There are no particularly tricky bits, like really awkward off-camber bends and chicanes and that kind of thing, or hairpins. So it's it's a good track, and the drivers know it so well because they test there. There's been a Grand Prix there for years and years. They'll have raced there in previous Formula E, even if they're, you know, they're rookie drivers. So it's a track that every single driver knows like the back of their hand, which is probably why they make fewer mistakes.
Yeah. So, but then going into race day, because the temperature was just such an issue, wasn't it? Because it was hotter race day than it was in qualifying.
Yeah, it was something like 37, 38 degrees air temperature and approaching 50 degrees track temperature, which is astonishingly hot. So I remember before the race they were saying that it's likely to be a three-stop race. And that encourages undercuts as well. I know we talked about this on a previous podcast. The undercut is where you pit before the car in front, and the plan is to get a good pit stop in and then to exit the pits And then your out lap, so the first lap you do after pitting, is quicker than the in lap of the guy who used to be in front of you. So the theory is you can do a quicker out lap and then gain a position and effectively overtake during the pits. The only way you can do that is if your tyres get up to temperature really quickly. If you've got tracks that are in a colder climate, it can take a couple of laps to warm your tyres up, in which case that doesn't work. Or if they're just slow corners, like Monaco, for example. Monaco's got lots of slow, tight corners. You don't really warm your tyres up doing that. It's the fast corners. So the undercut never really works at Monaco. But in Spain, where they're a mixture of fast and slow corners, and with a track temperature that high, the undercut was always going to be a good move. So you know drivers and teams were looking out and didn't want to be the last to pit, because they'll lose potentially a couple of seconds.
What I liked as well is that there was so many different strategies you could have been on,
and let's not forget the teams were changing strategies as well. So
as they went, yeah.
So there were teams that were trying to go for two stop. You know, Perez was told to go on a one-stop, which, I mean, you and I knew, it was never going to happen. Not even with Perez, particularly when they didn't even stick him on the hard tyres.
Yeah, I forget who the driver was, but they told one driver that Perez was going for one-stop, and I think it was Russell, and he just went, blimey.
Yeah, there was no way. There was no way.
Not in that heat. But before we go to race day, I'm just going to call you out for pouring me an alcoholic beverage and being off the pop yourself. You poured me a really nice glass of red wine. I don't know whether it's Spanish. It says Biscardo on it. Is that Spanish? You think it might be more Italian?
I don't know. I'm not sure. It was a recommendation from the girl at the shop who you introduced me to.
Yeah.
It's very nice.
It's a very nice
one. I'm just kind of I'm trying to lay off the booze at the moment.
Because you're mid-training.
Yeah, training pretty hard. Just trying to cut out alcohol. To cut out alcohol, crisps, chocolate, all that kind of stuff.
Well, now you've poured it, I've got to drink it. So, but I have at least got a soft drink next to me as well. But we don't get to do our segment where you're having some cocktail.
No, maybe next time.
Well, next time it's Monaco, and yeah, I think you're. That's probably one for a cocktail. We'll get on the martinis. So, race day. I actually thought while qualifying was like instant free, the race with the strategies, as we were saying, made it really quite exciting because it. That, you know, everybody's position was just kind of jostling throughout the whole thing. But we need to talk about, is it turn four or turn five?
Turn four is where they were getting gusts of wind and a couple of the cars span up. But before that, I mean, let's not forget Hamilton had his woes with Magnussen on the first lap after, a couple of corners. And it was probably the right call. It was probably a racing incident, but it was definitely far more Magnussen's fault than Hamilton's, because Hamilton was ahead coming into the corner. And therefore, it was, according to the rules, it is his corner at that point. If he's ahead, entering the corner, it's his corner. It doesn't matter that Magnussen outbraked him after he got to the corner and was driving around the outside. And Hamilton did give him, there was more than a car's width.
Yeah.
And it was Hamilton's corner. I think if it was on any other lap, because they tend to give a lot of leeway on the first lap, I think if it was on any other lap, they'd have penalised Magnussen. But because it was first lap, they just said it's a racing
incident. Everyone's
incident.
Just kind of fighting for position, aren't they?
And it was unlucky because it was wheel to wheel as well, and often you can get away with that. But I think maybe a bit of Magnussen's front wing or something had nicked Hamilton's car, gave him a puncture. But he was way back. He was like 40 seconds behind the car in front of him. So not only was he at the back of the grid, they were like half a lap behind by the time they'd pit stopped and changed.
I really felt for him. And I didn't even know whether he was going to make it back to the pit, because he was struggling. You could see with that tyre, he was really struggling to get it back.
He was, but he was, and again, this is testament to Hamilton's driving. He didn't drive like a lunatic to get it back to the pits. You see sometimes when cars just, when they have a puncture, and all they want to do is get back to the pit, get a new tyre. But what can happen is the tyre can delaminate at that point, and you get bits of tyre. You see it like kind of flapping around. And these cars can drive on three wheels, no problem. But when the tyre starts to shred and delaminate, and those bits of tyre start flapping around, that's when it starts to damage bodywork. So it can kind of damage the skirts on the car. And if you do that on one side, you're going to be losing all sorts of downforce. The front wing and the side pods aren't going to be able to deflect air to the rear wing. It's a nightmare. So what you often see is cars will race back to the pits, they'll shred their tyres, and they'll have done so much damage that even when they pit and they come back out again, they're slow.
They're done.
Whereas
yeah.
Hamilton was, you know, he was driving at a reasonable pace, didn't completely shred his tyres, got back out again and carried on the race.
But he didn't want to, did he?
No, he was on the phone to his race engineer saying, "Look, guys, we should
save the engine.
Just save the engine," which basically means retire the car.
That's unbelievable.
To give them their due, they said, "Look, we think we can get eighth or above." But anyway, yeah, turn four, there are a couple of cars that span. So Sainz, obviously.
Sainz was first.
He was the first, and then Verstappen had the same thing.
And the thing is...
And Leclerc had it, so that was Leclerc's issue on qualifying yesterday.
It wasn't a track time deleted, was it, with Leclerc? He muddled his own.
He just had that. Again, I don't know if it was a gust of wind or whether... It just looked like the back end gave out.
Yeah. But it was in that same spot. So when Sainz did it, we were kind of thinking, oh, did he just make some kind of error there?
Well, at that point, I thought it was a Ferrari issue. I thought there was an issue with the back end not giving them any feedback when it was about to lose grip and then suddenly just losing grip. Because what you want in a car is you want to be able to tell when it's on the edge and then you can just ease off a little bit. Or you can perhaps, you know, begin to counter steer before it actually gives way. If you're not given any feedback, the back end will just spin out and that's it. It's almost like game over by that point.
Yeah.
So I thought there was an issue with the Ferrari in that it was telling them that everything was fine, and then suddenly it's gone.
So Sainz did that, and where did he finish? Third.
Oh well, today.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. He had a great race.
So what a recovery! That shows you the pace of the Ferrari, and also Verstappen did exactly that same spin, didn't he?
Yeah, I don't think Verstappen's was quite as bad. I don't think he lost as much time. He certainly had a spin at that exact point with the same cause. It was like a gust of wind, but it wasn't quite as horrendous as Sainz.
And won the race.
and won the race. Yeah, I mean, and so Red Bull put in a good performance with both drivers.
Yeah.
Listening to them after the race, they were, you know, talking about, oh yeah, sometimes you have to do it the hard way. I don't really agree with that. I think, at the time... Leclerc was ahead by almost 10 seconds. It was like over 9 seconds ahead, and he retired through no fault of his own. That's not really the hard way when the guy who's 10 seconds in front of you retires and has a DNF. That's all, you know, it's not quite handed to you on a plate.
But it is lucky, yeah.
But it is lucky. That's not you doing everything. And you know, if Red Bulls had got a 1-2, and Leclerc would have finished, that would have been winning the hard way.
Yeah.
But they never had to race Leclerc, who was, you know, a lot ahead
miles
at that
ahead.
Point. Yeah.
So, yeah, let's talk about that for a second, because he's got a newer power unit than Sainz.
Had.
Yeah, a newer power unit. And this is what I was saying earlier about there's other manufacturers out there that I think have got bigger issues than Mercedes had. Mercedes just had the same issue everyone else had, porpoising. Now they've kind of seemed to look like they've got that under control. Ferrari, that is a really, really, really bad issue that the car just died.
It depends on what the issue is. They need to take it back to Maranello.
Yeah.
And
the Alfa also died.
Yeah,
same engine.
Not sure it's the same issue. So they need to find it. If it is the same issue and it's... And it's not an easy fix, then they need to make changes to that engine, because they can't have unreliable engines like that. You know,
no.
It's only a couple of races old, a couple of weekends old.
I felt for Hamilton at the beginning with that bust up. He has not had any luck, and then I really, really felt for Leclerc as well, because he'd not put a foot wrong. And then for the engine just to die.
But then Verstappen has had two DNFs this season.
Yeah.
He's had more DNFs than Leclerc, and he's still ahead.
But, again, he was handed this victory slightly on a plate, not only by the Ferrari, but also by his teammate, because of team orders. Now, admittedly, he was on fresher tyres and he probably would have got past his teammate anyway. But that team order to switch.
Yeah, I didn't like the team order. I mean, and he has some of his victories early on in the season have been handed to him as well.
But you never know, they might be absolutely crucial towards the end.
They could be. They absolutely could be. And Leclerc, some of Leclerc's victories were obviously when Verstappen had DNFs. So yeah. they both had not easy races, but you know, it hasn't been
low hanging fruit.
It hasn't been out and out competition between the two. Between the two drivers, I think Verstappen would have screamed past Perez, but they should have just let them race.
Yeah,
because the Mercedes weren't threatening that much. So I think they should have let them race, and Perez and Verstappen would have raced fairly. Yeah, well, Perez certainly would have done.
I'm with him on that, because he came over the radio at the end. And he said, "Yeah, happy for the team. We need to chat later." And I'm with him. It's just the assumption that he was going to give up that place and that his race was worthless, really.
Not worthless, but he is kind of paid to be Verstappen's wingman, I would say. And you only have to look at the history of Red Bull to know that's exactly what they do. And it's not that they don't change. I'm not usually one to go to Red Bull's defence, but
ooh, do we have to get out the diary and mark down?
Well, so if you
Andy
look
at, defended
if,
Red Bull.
If you look at the I do like Red Bull. Like Red Bull as a team. They've done some amazing stuff, and I like a lot of them. It's just some of the. I guess I'm not a huge fan of Christian Horner sometimes, as opposed to Red Bull. But I love Adrian Newey. I think Max Verstappen is a great driver. I think Christian Horner's doing him the best favours, the same way that I don't think he did Vettel any favours. Vettel was a nicer driver when he left Red Bull. But look back in the day when there was Vettel and Mark Webber as teammates. Vettel had the ability to utilise the off-blown diffuser more than Mark Webber did, and he could manage his tyres better. Mark Webber was much better around fast swooping corners. So in the early days when they didn't have the tyre issues, Mark Webber was just as fast as Vettel. As soon as tyre management came in, Vettel was much better because he was kind of quicker around the slow corners and he could just manage his tyres better. So obviously they were favouring Vettel because he was winning world championships and he was always most likely to win world championships. However, Webber retires, Daniel Ricciardo comes in, wins more races than Vettel, and they don't tell Daniel Ricciardo to let Vettel buy it every race when he's winning races. Mm. So if you put the performances in, you know, you'll be the number one driver. Think of when Verstappen came in on his first race and then won his first race with Red Bull coming in from the Toro Rosso. You know, they weren't asking him to let his teammate buy. So you've got to put in the performances. And it's just been that Verstappen's been quicker this season and last season. So if Perez puts in a series of good performances, you know, of better performances than Verstappen, let's qualify that. If Perez outperforms Verstappen for two or three races and gets in the lead, that problem will be over. But you've got to accept that if you're a second driver or you're a driver in Red Bull and you're significantly second, you're going to be asked to occasionally give up your place for the sake of the Drivers' World Championship.
Well, talking about Mark Webber and Daniel Ricciardo, Daniel Ricciardo took one of his records from him this weekend, didn't he? Daniel Ricciardo became the most experienced Australian.
He did, yeah, by one race this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, that's... I need to hold back and not say what...
You're not a fan of Daniel Ricciardo at the moment, are you?
I really love him as a person. I think I love his energy. Each and every race, he's just losing me. And I sat there this weekend and went, he out-qualified Lando Norris. Lando had... I've looked it up, actually, and Lando didn't do any of the post-match interviews because he's undergoing medical treatment. They think he's got tonsillitis.
Yeah, he's felt ill all weekend, apparently.
And then he races in stupid heat and he still finishes higher than Daniel Ricciardo, who had nothing wrong with him this weekend and was in a higher position. Can you explain that?
I'm not surprised.
I mean, yeah, I wasn't surprised, but, you know, Okay, and then consider Hamilton. Right, you said it. You were like, is Hamilton going to go past Ricciardo? And he did. Hamilton had that incident at the start. And look at what he did with his car.
Yeah,
I mean, I know they're two different drivers, but come on, Daniel. Like,
I mean, Hamilton, I mean, that was an astounding drive by anybody's standards, you know, because he did, apparently he did have a little bit of damage. So at one stage, he was putting in fastest laps. He was, at all times in the race, he was as quick as, basically as quick as the leaders. You know, he managed to work his way back. And don't, as I said earlier, don't forget, he was like 30 or 40 seconds behind the next car. So it wasn't just that he was at the back of the pack. It would have taken him, you know, 10 to 15 laps, if not more, maybe 20 laps, just to get, you know, just to get in contention again. So he was, yeah, he put in an astounding performance.
But just back to Daniel for a second. You'll have noticed that incrementally over these podcasts, I've been losing patience with him more and more. And he had two rookie drivers absolutely scream past him this weekend. For no, you know, and he didn't even look like he had his elbows out at all. I sat there during that Grand Prix thinking, who do I want to have his seat?
I think he gave up some way into last season when he was getting out-qualified, out-raced, just outperformed by Lando Norris consistently.
Then go be a Sky pundit, because he's a lovely guy. Like, his personality is brilliant.
But he's
go
making,
be a pundit.
He's making so much money and he's driving a Formula One car. I don't think you can expect him to retire. Or not voluntarily. I would expect McLaren to do something about it.
I don't actually think he should have that second seat anymore. And I was sitting there going, who would I pick to be Lando's second?
It's difficult because who's available? I mean, they'd have to look. They'd probably, at this stage, they'd probably have to look into, you know, some of the lower formulae and some of the drivers, you know, and bring in another rookie. Because Lando Norris is good enough to be a team leader.
Yeah.
I mean, he's team leader already.
Yeah.
They probably need to bring in another rookie. It's not like, they're not like in the position Mercedes are, where they've got, you know, they had Russell in the Williams seat. They could just kind of pull him out at any point.
Yeah.
You know, in the middle of a season, just did a race when Hamilton was ill. They don't really have that luxury. But yeah, I don't think you could get a really good rookie in, and they certainly wouldn't do any worse. Yeah. And they'd have more potential than Daniel Ricciardo has.
I mean, I just look at his drive, just doesn't excite me. And you look at Alonso and Vettel going at it this weekend, like, I want to see that, right? And they're both still driving with such, they don't give an inch. You know, they're still absolutely gunning for it.
Well, Daniel Ricciardo used to drive on the edge. You know, if you think back to a year or two ago, in fact, maybe slightly longer, but when he was in the Red Bull, you would often see him with four wheels sliding. It'd be like four wheel drifting around the corner. And he was quite at home. He was really comfortable with all the wheels sliding, whether he was getting a little bit of understeer or oversteer. He could cope with anything. And he'd often just throw it into a corner, have all four wheels sliding, cope with it, and then just rock it off again. And he was fine with that. Whereas now, he doesn't appear to... I don't know. Mm. I'm not sure what it is about that, either that McLaren car or whether his head's just gone. Or I mean, I'm inclined to think his head's gone.
Yeah.
That's not to say he can't get it back. He might get a drive with another team and it energises him.
Yeah.
But it certainly, I think enough has gone by with his tenure at McLaren for them to be looking at filling
in that contract. Yeah. I mean, I've been willing him to do well over the last few weeks. And now I'm just giving up.
For me, it was the point last season when he won the race. Because I thought that would be the turning point. I thought he's been beaten by Norris.
Back, yeah.
Now he's won a race. That's going to turn, you know, something in the back of his mind is going to switch on again, and he's going to be putting in decent performances. Because he's now proven that the car can do it. He's proven that he can beat Norris. That should be all he needs to give him the kick that he needs. But when, you know, immediately in the race after that, he just seemed to switch off again. That was it for me. I kind of half expected McLaren to replace him for this season after that.
Yeah. Just really disappointing.
And it'd be nice to see someone like Zhou Guanyu in the McLaren.
Yeah.
It's obviously
he's great.
He is, but he's a... I mean, he's... I'm not sure whether he's a Ferrari driver, but I know the Alphas have links with Ferrari, so it might
but
not be quite.
But Yuki Tsunoda's really, really come on this season.
Yeah, he's in the Red Bull junior program though. So it's, you know, there are some good drivers out there, but it's whether McLaren can get hold of them. Who was the guy who was in practice one? I think was it De Vries, who's been. I think he's won everything in his lower formula. Mm. He was driving for Williams, I believe, or one of the teams. Can't remember. But there are a couple of really decent, you know, rookies out there.
I think it's time to be having those conversations at McLaren. Really do. So should we talk a little bit more about Hamilton? Because driver of the day.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, there were quite a few drivers who put in good performances.
But that was exceptional.
But his was phenomenal. And, you know, consider the bad luck he had as well. Because, you know, Russell got knocked in the first corner, but nothing happened. You know, it was just a little knock. I think something came, who knocked into him? I can't remember.
Was it Perez?
I think it was Perez.
Yeah.
And I saw something, I think, but I think I was flying off Perez's car, not Russell's.
Yeah, just a little bit of carbon fibre by the
looks of it. Tiny bit of carbon fibre off the wing, but Russell's car was fine, whereas Hamilton gets a slight knock and that's it, you know, it's almost race over.
I think we were talking last week about the problem if Hamilton he doesn't need to prove himself. He doesn't need to do anything more. He's achieved more than any other F1 driver. So what's keeping him there? And I was like, they've got to get it together because, you know, if he's getting disappointment after disappointment, he's at that point in his career, he'll just go, you know, hey, I'm gone. You know, I'm just going to go and sit on a beach somewhere. I think that was a critical moment that he needed, that he had the car was what he needed in that moment for him to go from where he was, you know, to where he finished. And I think that hopefully has given him that confidence that he has got a car that he can work with.
Yeah, they need to. I mean, they fixed. He had a leak, didn't he? He had a leak towards the end of the race, so he had to kind of lift and coast, and let, you know, let science by.
But it still means that I think it was exactly what he needed, that little kind of lift. And George Russell as well was doing some amazing defensive driving this weekend. His defense against Verstappen was just unbelievably good.
Yeah, Hank, just to correct you, I think we said that Sainz came third. He was fourth, wasn't
fourth.
He, today?
Fourth, he was sorry. Fourth, yeah.
Because Russell's managed to stay in third, even though he had to lift and coast as well.
Yeah, I guess that's because we've talked about the fact of good drivers, great drivers, championship.
Yeah.
When you can have those knocks, you can spin like Sainz did, you can have a knock like Hamilton did, and still recover your race and be in that like top five, then, oh my God.
I mean, that was it. I think Hamilton put in a championship-worthy drive today. I think Leclerc put in a championship-worthy qualifying yesterday. Mm. I'm yet to be convinced about Sainz.
Yeah.
I know he did well today, but it wasn't quite the drive that Hamilton had.
No.
You know, he only just got past Hamilton because Hamilton had a second issue and Hamilton started. You know, at the end of lap one, when Hamilton got out of the pits, you know, Sainz was on lap two, and he was probably a minute and a half ahead of him, in a quicker car. You know, by rights, the Ferrari should be quicker than the Mercedes anyway. And yet he only just managed to get past on like the penultimate lap. So, yeah, good drive, but not an amazing drive. Whereas I think Hamilton's was fantastic.
I don't know. I think I've got more.
That's not to say he can't do it, but this wasn't one of them.
See, I really rate Sainz, and I think that he's just had a run of bad luck. But I think there's a championship driver in Sainz. I think there is in Leclerc, I think there is in George Russell, and I think there is in Norris. I just want them. I want to see them.
Yeah, I think Sainz and Leclerc need to get a little bit more consistent.
Yeah,
Leclerc is undoubtedly blisteringly fast, but he still makes the odd mistake, and there tend to be unenforced errors. The same with Verstappen. He can make a few unenforced errors, and he can see the red mist, and you know, he goes crashing into people sometimes. Not as much of an issue when he's out in front, but and he's obviously blisteringly fast as well. But he has the occasional issue. Science, I mean, he hasn't had the best luck, but he has had a few issues that, you know, he's crashed the car a few times when he shouldn't have done. You know, he spun it. You know, he had the issue with the gust of wind, but there were lots of gusts of wind, and you know, nobody else. You know, only Verstappen had the issue as well. You know, he just needs to get a little bit more consistent. I think Russell and Norris are showing speed and consistency.
Yeah.
So I would put them as overall faster drivers over the course of a championship. I mean, yeah. Verstappen and Sainz and Leclerc might be quicker over one lap and possibly over one race as well. But I think those guys are the consistent ones. And that used to be so cast your mind back to like the late 90s, early 2000s, when it was like Michael Schumacher against Mika Häkkinen. And on his day, Mika Häkkinen could beat anybody. But Schumacher was more consistent over the course of the season. We'll forget the cheating, but just over the course of the season, he was more consistent.
George Russell did something today where we both took an intake of breath and went, and it's Verstappen had gone past him.
Oh, that was...
And Verstappen thought...
Incredible.
I've done him. And George was just like, no, you haven't. And the way he planted his car, he just... It was like I think he outbroke him just... But while slotting his car just in front.
And not locking up. Not, you know, it would have been easy for him to lock all the wheels doing that and then just to slide off the track.
It's equivalent, you know, when you're on a motorway or something and you try and just plant yourself in the car in front of the car, like in front on the left-hand lane. So you overtake, but you're instantly slamming on your anchors the minute you get in front.
To try and pull off into the next junction that you've left too late, and you go, never done that.
Never done that. He just did that kind of manoeuvre, and that was world class.
Well, yeah, because Verstappen, obviously, he was frustrated when he couldn't get past him for a few laps before.
I think the heat was getting to him, wasn't it?
And then later on in the race, when he was a bit happier, but he thought, right, this is it. I've got my DRS now. I've got the faster, better tyres. I'm going to go rocketing past it, and he did. He did go rocketing past him.
Yeah,
but Russell just on older tyres outbraked him. Positioned the car absolutely perfectly. That was one of the best overtakes I've seen for a long time.
Yeah,
and incredible.
And also we need to talk about the DRS on Verstappen's car, because again, that's another mechanical thing that, you know, they've had brakes that have overheated. Now this DRS was opening and then shutting straight away. There's just a lot of inconsistencies in terms of like the mechanics this year, isn't there?
Well, yeah, and they were trying to fob Verstappen off a little bit, saying, you know, I only pushed it once. He's like, the only reason I'm pushing it multiple times is because it isn't freaking working, and I have to keep pushing it. And they said, yeah, right, push it after you go over the bumps. If you push it and then go over the curve, it's going to shut it. But surely that's an issue. If going over a curb shuts your DRS, you've got a DRS issue. So Red Bull just need to sort out their reliability. Because let's face it, if Verstappen had finished the two races he hadn't, even if he hadn't won, he'd be, you know, he could be 40 points ahead, which is what Leclerc was a couple of races ago.
Yeah. But it was a really good race to see some absolute world class.
And it was a great drive from Verstappen, because he didn't have DRS for half the race.
He did well.
He did put in a great drive.
Hamilton he was on soft tyres and went round the outside on turn 12, wasn't it? And just decided, I'm going to overtake here, where nobody else normally overtakes. So there was a few, and Alonso versus Vettel was just absolutely world-class, seeing them two spar with each other. So there were some moments of absolute flair this weekend.
Yeah,
which is really good.
I've got that down
as a highlight.
As a highlight, Alonso and Vettel, yeah.
Oh, every time they get together, I'm just like... It's amazing.
It used to be like that Alonso's a fantastic driver, and it's great to see him fighting with everyone. But there are certain drivers where when they get together, you know it's going to be really close wheel-to-wheel racing.
But they're not going to.
But you know you're not going to see a crash.
Yeah.
It used to be like that with Alonso and Webber. You know, I remember, I think it was Webber overtook Alonso at Eau Rouge on Spa, which is like, it's not the sort of corner that you'd expect to see any overtaking at all. Managed to take him on the outside in Eau Rouge, and he wouldn't have even attempted that with another driver. It's just he has so much trust with Alonso. And there are other times when Alonso's done the same thing with Webber, and you'd always used to see amazing racing. I think it's like that with Alonso and Vettel now.
Well, Perez as well can do that real close racing.
Yeah, he's very, very trustworthy.
He's brilliant. I love to see that. And I like the fact the new cars, that we're seeing a lot more of that. So should we go through the...
One other one was Verstappen on Bottas at turn 14 around the outside. That was an amazing, amazing overtake. Really good.
What's really nice is when you see them do it on places where you're not expecting it.
Yeah.
And just the grip they had and the trust they had in the car just to go for it.
And I think the... sorry to interrupt you. The reason we're probably seeing it a little bit more with the Mercedes is now that they're pretty much on top of their porpoising issues, they're not bouncing up and down. They know they can just kind of, you know, plant their throttle coming out of corners and stuff, and they can just rely on the car a bit more. Mm. Whereas before, even going around some of the corners, they'd be bouncing up and down. So of course they're not going to be pulling in, you know, the astonishing overtakes.
I think that's going back to trying to articulate what it is about Ricciardo.
He doesn't have the spark.
Yeah.
He doesn't have that spark.
Alonso and Vettel still got it. Mm. Hamilton, with everything that he's got going on with the car, still went, you know, I'm going to go around the outside. You know, they're fighting for, and I don't know who the quote is, but there's a famous quote that as soon as you don't go for that little gap, you should stop racing. And
You'd still... You know, when Kimi Raikkonen was racing,
oh my god,
you'd still see him, you know, trying, you know, he'd put the old daft move in as well, but you'd still see him kind of, you know, challenging and racing on the absolute limit. I remember there was one, I think it was Turkey in 2020, where they'd obviously, because of all the COVID restrictions and stuff, you know, the season was out the window for a while, and then they kind of came back. But there were no supporters and no crowds there. So they had to kind of negotiate with kind of other tracks to try and get, you know, races where possible with no crowds. And obviously the way tracks make money is through audiences. And because they, you know, they have to pay Formula One for the privilege of having a race. So, you know, it costs them money, but they make it back with, you know, with ticket prices and food and merchandise and all that kind of stuff. But because there were no supporters in 2020, Formula One had to pay out and to tracks. So then it made Turkey feasible, because Turkey was an amazing track, but it was always empty, couldn't make any money. But in 2020, suddenly it became feasible again. They had the track there. They resurfaced the track, but it was really slippery. It wasn't rubbered in at all. Hadn't been used. So they got like 20 to 25 Mondeos to like howl around the track and try and lay down
Mondeos,
some rubber.
Mondeos,
yeah, no,
really?
Seriously, Mondeos. Because it was, I think they were, the car park at Turkey was used by like leasing companies or something. So they had all these like corporate cars, lease cars. So they got these Mondeos around the track to try and rubber it down. But then it rained. So it kind of washed all the rubber away. And it was a really, really slippy track. And then Kimi Raikkonen on the opening laps, I think he overtook like 11 positions on one lap, because he could see grip where nobody else could, and it was like watching a video game. It was incredible. So yeah, even at like 40-41, still putting an outstanding performance. Yeah. I mean, how old's Alonso now? I think he's 40 years old, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's 40 or 41.
Still fighting for it. Still
driving on the ragged edge.
Yeah. That's what you've got to do, because if not, you're just not going to keep up with those lap times. So right, should we go through the standings?
Yeah, I think we should.
Max Verstappen, 110 points. Charles Leclerc, 104 points. Only 6 points in it, but Max Verstappen has actually taken the lead. Then Perez on 85 and George Russell on 74. So George Russell is doing well to kind of... He's knocking on the door of Perez.
Yeah, I mean, he's had a bit of luck.
Yeah.
But he's put in some outstanding drives as well. And you can't say it's all luck with Russell.
No. I think, you know, he'll always try and get 110% out of the car that you give him. Sainz on 65, then Lewis Hamilton on 46, which I think is just disappointing, obviously, for him. Lando Norris on 39, and then Bottas on 38. And then you go back down to Esteban Ocon on 30 and Magnussen on 15. Ricciardo is down in 12. Right, I'm just going to stop talking about Ricciardo now. But so you can... Yeah, I'm... I'm impressed with Russell. He's keeping up there. And, you know, I think that's going to be interesting to see where he finishes at the end of the season, because that's really quite good. So moving on to Constructors, with a little bit of a meow from the cat.
That was Stewie again.
Stewie really does love the Constructors. Red Bull, 195, and then Ferrari, 169. So, I mean, that gap's opening up a little bit, isn't it? And then Mercedes on 120, and then McLaren on 50. That jump between third and fourth is staggering.
And second and third. So Mercedes are kind of, it's like you described it the other day, in that they're in this kind of no man's land, but they're all alone. So they could suddenly get a lot worse and probably not lose a position, or they could get a lot better and not really gain a position as well. They really are on a, you know, all alone at the moment.
They are.
They're not really competing with anybody, and they'd have to get a lot better to kind of get to the, you know, to the Ferraris and the Red Bulls, or get a lot worse.
I mean, I have to say, McLaren fourth in the constructors, they'd be happy with that, wouldn't they?
Well, okay, without wishing to go back to Daniel Ricciardo, considering who they've got. So if you go back to the drivers, Lando Norris has 39 points out of their 50. So if they had another driver
that was
similar to that, they would be much, much closer to the to the Mercedes.
Bottas and Zhou Guanyu, they're both driving pretty good. I mean, Zhou Guanyu's
had two DNFs, so that's not a reflection on how good he is.
He's actually really, he's impressed us with his driving.
Considering we've only seen him we've had six races so far. We've only really seen him compete in four of them.
Yeah, and he's been
outstanding.
Yeah.
So, yeah,
I don't think he's put a foot wrong, really. So, I mean, McLaren, I think if it got to the end of the season, McLaren were in fourth in the constructors, I think they'd take that. I think that personally, I'd like to. But I don't know. Maybe Lando would take seventh as well, because you've got the two Red Bulls, the two Mercedes, and the two Ferraris in front of you. That's probably achievable, isn't it? If he just holds on to seventh, that's not a bad.
I can't see him. I mean, he will want to fend off Valtteri Bottas, who's just behind him
by a point.
But I can't really, unless somebody has some real bad luck, particularly the Mercedes.
I don't think he's going to penetrate that top six.
I don't think
six.
He's going to get in the top six. No, not this season.
But he will be best of the rest. That's the
that's a great thing for his CV. So look, I came, you know, in the car that I had, I came seventh, so the only people that were beating me were in Red Bulls, Ferraris, or Mercedes. I'm better than anybody else.
Yeah.
That is a great CV for this year in this car.
Yeah, and if he can keep McLaren fourth, they'll be happy. But, oh man, his biggest barrier to that is his own teammate. Has to be said. So, looking forward then, we've got I love Monaco. We've said it on the podcast. I like it. It's just not a great race.
It depends on the weather. In the wet, it is one of the greatest races.
Mm.
But it doesn't rain that often. It's a great spectacle. And it's, you know, they always put on a good show. And qualifying is amazing. It's a great race. It's a great track to, you know, qualifying is always extraordinarily exciting, because it is a good race. It is a track to watch cars drive.
I needed it again.
I haven't been drinking.
I know.
Perhaps I should have something.
Yeah.
It's a great track to watch cars drive around.
Yay!
It's not an amazing track. I mean, I've never been, but I've known a few people to go, and they've said it's not amazing when you're there, because you can't see too much, and you can't see. It's not like other tracks where you can see the bit that you're facing and then turn around and see other bits. You know, you've literally only got your stretch or your corner that you can see.
Yeah.
But watching on TV from a viewer's point of view, it's really good. So qualifying is always exciting. Practice sessions are always good fun to watch. If it's wet, the race will be as well.
On that note as well, there is a rumour that they're going to redo the whole entire calendar to try and be a bit more sustainable.
Well, that would make sense, because at the moment you've got, like, I mean, Canada is always in the middle of the European section, which doesn't make any sense to me as well. Now we've got, like, Miami and Canada in the middle. It's, you know, why don't we just group it? So we've got North America, then Europe, then Asia, then the Middle East, or whatever, you know, whatever they want to do. But they just need to group these particular, you know, groups of tracks together, surely.
But then this leads me on to my point, which is, the way it's been done always, I think, has favoured good weather in wherever they are. So, like, a lot of the European ones are in the height of summer, you know, whereas you can go to Saudi Arabia, and you can go to Australia any time of the year, and it's likely to be warm, you know.
I mean, the issue is, in some of these places, they don't want to be too hot. So you don't want to race in Bahrain in the height of their summer.
No.
Because it'll be like 45 degrees air temperature, and the track will be ridiculous.
But could you imagine doing it in the UK in, I don't know, early in the year or late in the year?
No, but they could easily have it so all the European races are together and all the North American races are together.
I just think they need an eye on weather in these places, because if not, you could be doing it sustainably, but have, like, lots of delayed races, because, you know, I mean, we had one last season, didn't we, where we literally sat there ready for the race and it almost never happened.
Well, they've had that in Malaysia a few times, in the Malaysian Grand Prix. It would always rain there. They for a number of years, they always had the Malaysian Grand Prix in the height of the rainy season, which is just ridiculous. But yeah, they could easily have it so that all the European races are in the European summer. You know, I can understand how some Grand Prix might say, right, we want to pay you a lot more money to have the first race of the season because we know that lots of people are going to watch it, or we want the final race of the season because we know that's when the Drivers' Championship is likely to be decided. Yeah. You know, it always used to be Brazil, but then obviously for years it's been Abu Dhabi because they like that. You know, they like to have, you know, as many people as possible watching. Yeah, because
that work last year?
Because they want the championship to be decided. And it can prove to be astonishing. So I can kind of understand that. But outside the first and the last, just group the races together. Don't have Canada in the middle of Europe.
Yeah.
Even if they just did that.
I just think that, if you can plan it, but also have an eye on the weather, that would be sensible.
But it should be easier to do that.
Yeah.
Because all the countries that are grouped together are going to have a relatively similar season, aren't they?
Yeah.
It's when you're moving continent to continent, that's when you're going to introduce these anomalies where you have races that aren't quite ideal weather. But if you're just sticking to, okay, it's summer here now, we'll have the races here. Now it's summer here, we'll have the races here. Now it's summer, you know, just
you are that. You are talking about logic, which not a lot of people possess.
I mean, it's not an easy job to organise these things, because obviously there are some street circuits and you'd have, you know, like Monaco, for example, is used to having it at a certain point. So, you know, there would obviously be some negotiations there.
Well, this is why I'm talking about it, because it might change for next season if they're going to do that, which means you might have more risk of a rainy Monaco.
Well, that would be great, though.
Yeah.
Everybody loves a rainy Monaco.
Yeah.
I mean, there are some circuits where you want rain. I still think Silverstone is good in the wet. The British Grand Prix in the wet is fantastic. Think of Lewis Hamilton winning in 2008 when everybody else was spinning but him. That's one of that's one of his greatest wins.
Lando Norris at Spa, he was doing amazing until he put it into a wall, but he had no fear, did he?
Yes, but Spa's good in the wet. You know, there are tracks that, because when it rains there, it's not a washout. You don't want a wet race in Malaysia because the chances are it won't happen.
Well, I have a rain stick and I will get it out and you can shake that rain stick all week in a run-up to Monaco. How about that?
Yeah. I mean, it could be that next season they have more races together and then bigger gaps in between.
Yeah.
So we might see more three-week gaps to enable them to cross continents and less two-week gaps.
Yeah, that'd be fine. I thought this was a three-week gap. I'm glad you reminded me that the race was on. Thank you.
So when is Monaco?
It is next weekend.
Are you sure?
Yes. Yes, I am sure.
Marvellous.
Yeah, brilliant. Well, we will see you all then.